Welcome back to another episode of Apple II Time Slice. I'm Steve Weirich. On the last episode, we discussed the origin of the Apple Computer Company. Today, we're going to look at five things that characterized the world of the early microcomputer in the 1970s. In that era, computers were very rudimentary. First, the earliest microcomputers were very limited and very slow. The Intel 4004, one of the first processors on a chip, ran at the speed of 0.74 MHz and could execute 92,000 instructions per second. Compare this with Apple's M5 processor chip from the present day, which has a speed of about 4.5 GHz, 6,000 times the speed of the 4004. And that is for just one core of the M5, which can execute 18 to 36 billion instructions per core. The next iteration, the Intel 8008, was a little faster and could address more memory. The Intel 8080 hit the sweet spot of speed and access to 64K of memory, and that was what made it possible to create a usable computer in the form of the Altair 8800. This was the computer that had captured the attention of the Homebrew Computer Club when Steve Wozniak first began to attend meetings. Secondly, having a computer required actually assembling it and soldering the pieces together. A home computer in the 1970s was an oddity and was entirely in the realm of electronics enthusiasts. That is why the earliest information on these appeared in magazines such as Radio Electronics and Popular Electronics. Furthermore, assembling a computer out of parts was definitely not a beginner's project. Handling the integrated circuits, specifically the microprocessor and the memory chips, was much more tricky than dealing with the various resistors, capacitors, and transistors used assembling a radio or oscilloscope, and certainly sensitive to static electricity that would never have been a problem for projects built using vacuum tubes. If you had the ability to successfully build a computer, you could likely also take the next step of wiring in other devices, such as a keyboard, video display, or printer. But as those were additional costs, they were usually not there at the start. Third, to actually use your computer required writing your own program, entering it manually, and testing it. Writing programs required a knowledge of the various 1 or 2 byte commands used to control the microprocessor. You had to handle all of the details of managing not only operations within the processor, but also specifics about where to put information in the computer memory. It would be something like having to give specific instructions to your car on when to fire each piston and in what order to make the engine run. Also, a program might have to be entered into computer memory 1 byte at a time. On the Altair, that meant flipping the switches on the front panel into the correct binary position for each byte, then entering that byte, then doing the next one, and so on. If the Altair owner was fortunate enough to have a video terminal and keyboard, the program would still have to be entered 1 byte at a time into the memory. Fourthly, most people did not have a device for saving and reloading programs or the data they created. Because the hardware design was more simple, some early home computers used static RAM, which meant that when the computer was powered off, the bytecodes in memory did not disappear. When dynamic RAM became less expensive, it replaced the static RAM. However, it did make things more complicated as it required frequent power refresh to maintain the contents of the memory. Assuming a computer did not have static RAM, programs would have to be re-entered each time they were powered on. Having something available for storage of programs or the data created by those programs was very desirable. The premier device early on was a teletype with a paper tape reader. The program could be loaded in from paper tape after a bootstrap program was manually entered on the computer, and could also be saved to paper tape. The keyboard on the teletype was then the primary data entry device, avoiding all of the front panel switch flipping. These were not easily available, however, so a lower cost solution was needed. Cassette tapes became a popular way to handle this problem, as both the cassette recorders and tapes were readily available and fairly inexpensive. Fifth, a printer was a luxury. The simplest way to have a printer on these early micros was also to use a teletype, if you could get your hands on one. The first dot matrix printer, the Centronix Model 101, was an option, but very expensive. In 1970, it could cost from $2,500 to $3,000, which is equivalent to $20,000 in 2026. That was a look at five facts about the early microcomputer era. Next time, we will look at ways that Wozniak's Apple I addressed some of these issues. I'm Steve Weirich, and this has been Apple II Time Slice.